This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As we were covering that protest, one of the commanders came and told me that today it is between life and death. And therefore, they started tear gassing us. The good thing, I was putting on a bulletproof, so it fell down. Then it exploded under my legs. I got severe injuries.
That's Alex Esagal, a photojournalist with Uganda's Daily Monitor newspaper, describing a police crackdown on journalists. Details coming up also. 12 people are feared dead after a boat traveling to the Democratic Republic of Congo capsized. And pirates last night kidnapped 4 sailors and shot a guard aboard a Greek oil tanker off the coast of Togo. We have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the West African country of Senegal, is known for its stable democracy and peaceful culture. But as terrorist activity expands across the Sahel, the threat of extremism has grown in the country, so much so that the United States government is ramping up efforts to help Senegal secure its borders. Anika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar.
While Islamic State and Al-Qaeda factions have wreaked havoc across West Africa, Senegal has managed to maintain peace and security within its borders. But as conflicts surround the country, where 95% of the population practices Islam, experts warn the unrest could spill over and end the country's tradition of religious and ethnic pluralism. The United States and other countries are taking steps to help Senegal implement security measures. Ambassador Nathan Sales is the United States Coordinator for Counterterrorism.
We think that the situation has become increasingly fraught, and that's exactly why the Counterterrorism Bureau in particular and the State Department in generally have been surging resources into the region. We're trying to stand up the capabilities of these governments to confront these terrorist threats on their own. We want to make sure that the terrorist threats in the region don't destabilize and disrupt a government and an economy that have been really on the leading edge in the region.
Sales says the U.S. has invested up to $10 million a year for various security initiatives over the last several years. During a recent meeting with Senegalese officials in Dakar, Sales stressed the importance of sharing intelligence to prevent terrorists from entering the country by using information like biometric and airline reservation data. He also spoke about the importance of maintaining a terrorist watch list.
We see Senegal as this island of stability and prosperity and security. And we envision a role in the region for Senegal to play as an exporter of security.
The number of violent attacks perpetrated by Islamic extremist groups in the Sahel has doubled each year since 2016, according to U.S. Department of Defense research group, the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. Deaths linked to these attacks have also doubled each year. Kwider Zerouk is Chief Communications Officer for the United Nations Office for West Africa and the Sahel.
In Mali, for instance, terrorist groups are regularly attacking local and international security forces, including the Blue Helmets serving in the UN mission MINUSMA. And the violence has spilled over into neighboring countries with an alarming number of recent attacks in Burkina Faso, for instance. So we can say that the terrorist attacks are for this period and comparing to, for instance, the last 4 years or 5 years have been amplified.
Zerouk said terrorism has destabilized almost the entire region in the last 5 years. It's unclear how much longer Senegal will be able to hold on to its security as the threat grows around it. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar.
Police in Uganda's capital fired tear gas at a group of journalists today, ironically, as the media members protested against alleged police brutality. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
A group of about 50 journalists had gathered at Kampala City Center to march to police headquarters and deliver a petition to the chief of police. The petition asks authorities to investigate and reprimand officers who were found guilty of assaulting journalists and to stop police brutality in the field. Last week, police allegedly assaulted four journalists who went to cover a strike at Makerere University over a 15% tuition increase. On Monday, police quickly dispersed the journalists' protest and briefly detained some of them. Alex Esagala, a photojournalist with the Daily Monitor newspaper, describes the scene.
As we were covering that protest, one of the commander came and told me that today it is between life and death. And therefore, they started tear gassing us. The good thing, I was putting on a bulletproof, so it fell down. Then it exploded under my legs. I got severe injuries.
A few journalists were eventually allowed into the police headquarters to deliver the petition. Isaac Semakade is a lawyer who was among those tear gassed and bundled into a police pickup truck. Semakade, who represents many journalists in court, says his non-profit legal aid services is struggling to keep up with police and government actions against the media.
We are overwhelmed with the requests for rapid response, requests to unseal closed media houses. We are overwhelmed with requests to recover stolen and broken cameras and other media equipment. Something has to be done as we enter the general election cycle. Journalists all over Uganda are under threat. Let this threat not be minimized or normalized.
Onyango Patrick, a Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson, told VOA that the petition was received and would be delivered to the chief. Patrick says police and journalists need to respect each other.
We both need to understand each other's role. As a journalist, what am I supposed to do? As a police officer, what am I supposed to do in times of riots? So we both need each other, and we are both not wrong, and we are both not correct.
The Uganda Journalists Association leadership says reporters will not cover police functions until they hear from the police inspector general. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Well, people are feared dead after a boat traveling in the Democratic Republic of Congo capsized near a landing site on the Ugandan side of Lake Albert. A search for survivors and bodies is continuing. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
About 18 passengers, most of them traders, were on the canoe going from Uganda to the DRC this morning. Julius Hakiza is the police spokesperson in Uganda's Albertine region.
It was a tragedy. Today morning at around 7, a boat suspected ferrying people who were going to Congo capsized in water. Six survived. They managed to swim and they are now out of danger. Then the rest of 12 have not been seen as per now.
According to Akiza, the Uganda Police and the People's Defense Forces UPDF marine experts, together with the fishing community, are combing the waters to search for the missing. He says although investigations into the cause of the accident are ongoing, police suspect the small boat may have been carrying too many people.
Preliminary investigation, think there was heavy wind and most probably the boat was overloaded.
No details were immediately available of the passengers' nationalities and identities. Boat accidents have become increasingly common on Lake Albert, which is shared between Uganda and the DRC. In May, dozens of football fans died after a boat they were traveling in capsized on the lake. In December 2016, about 40 footballers and fans drowned there too. Refugees fleeing violence in DRC use canoes to cross to Uganda. Most of the people who use the canoes do not follow water safety guidelines, including use of life jackets. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Pirates last night kidnapped four sailors and shot a guard aboard a Greek oil tanker off the coast of Togo. Togo's navy said today armed individuals attacked overnight when the Elka Aristotle was about 18 kilometers off the coast of the capital Lome. Togo's government is investigating and vows to make efforts to catch the pirates. According to officials, two of the kidnapped sailors are from the Philippines. One is Greek and one is Georgian. The attack Sunday night was the second in the past few days in the region. A Norwegian shipping company says that pirates abducted nine crew members from the vessel MV Bonita early Saturday while the ship was anchored near Kotonu. The Norwegian Shipowners Association says the kidnapping victims are all Philippine nationals. 15 past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Rwanda's Supreme Court is hearing debate demanding modification of the year-old land tax law, saying it unfairly penalizes the poor who make up the majority of the population. The law provides that residential housing be taxed double the rate for business. Eugene Uimana has more details from Kigali.
The petitioners are led by Edward Murangwa, helped by friends of courts like the University of Rwanda, Transparency International Rwanda, with other independent lawyers. They say some articles of the land tax law contravene property rights and the principles of social justice and welfare. This is lawyer Tratsinze Emmanuel. He says, let's take an example of houses. They are taxed according to their uses. Houses are taxed annually 1% of their value, while those for businesses pay 0.5%. It is a big problem because this difference doesn't give justice to the majority. Lawyers say the articles violate people's rights because they impose a 50% increase in the tax on the plot that is beyond standard size of 300 square meters and an additional tax of 100% on an undeveloped plot. Grandparents have been complaining from the law's deliberation to its enactment. Things have really changed. Land used to be owned by the people, by inheriting it or buying it. Then the government came up with a law stating that citizens don't own land. Now the land is state-owned. We pay rent. This means that the land is not the property of citizens. Then that government comes again, imposing taxes. People shouldn't pay taxes for the things they don't own. Transparency International Rwanda says the law penalizes citizens and violates articles of the Constitution that say land taxes should be considered on the means of general grants. Though the government says the law aims at generating revenues, lawyers say it keeps many grants homeless. The National Housing Policies Research of 2015 indicated that 83% of people in cities in Rwanda are living in rental residential houses. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Music artists in Cameroon are having a hard time winning sales and airplay. They're blaming the popularity of Nigerian songs, saying nightclubs and media are promoting them over local product, but the clubs say they are only responding to people's requests. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Loving you, Nascam.
This song, One Ticket, by Nigerian pop stars Keys Daniel and Davido, is blasting through loudspeakers in Safari, a nightclub in Cameroon's capital city, Yaoundé. DJ Emanuela Tangden says they select their music from requests made by the audience. This Saturday night, 80% of the music on their lineup is of Nigerian origin.
Ada, who sang Only You Jesus, Mercy Chinwo, Excess Love, Steve Brown, You Are Great, David G, My Trust Is In You, P-Square, Flavor, Davido.
Cameroon Music Corporation, which protects the interests of Cameroonian artists, reports that in 2018, foreign music, especially from Nigeria, dominated records played in nightclubs, radio and TV stations. More than 1 million of the 3 million CDs sold in Cameroon were of Nigerian music. Musicologist Teodom Boa says Cameroonians fall in love with Nigerian music not only because of the proximity of the two countries, but also because of the messages of hope, especially for the unemployed and poor youths that are prevalent in Nigerian music.
The message, most of them talk about marriage, you talk about getting rich, and that of course is what people want to hear, so it translates in the music. Then religious messages have an impact on people's lives, and so most of that is passed on by religious music, of course, from Nigeria.
But Cameroon musician Afua Kom, a promoter of the Njang music from the English-speaking Northwest region, blames media houses and nightclub animators for the unpopularity of Cameroon music.
Those who are animating on several programs play nothing but foreign music. The music becomes popular. When some of us will go to this animator, go to some of these radios, they play it one time, two times. That is what has been killing us. Not that we are not playing good music in Cameroon. The radio take all the time to play Nigerian music from morning till.
Afua Kom says the government of Cameroon should reinforce laws that require 70% of music played by media houses to be of local artists and suspend or fine those who violate the regulations. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Nigeria has the highest cancer mortality rate in Africa, according to the World Health Organization. Low awareness, late detection, and the high cost of treatments are major factors. But in October, also World Cancer Awareness Month, several nonprofits in the West African nation are taking information about the disease to the streets and sponsoring underprivileged patients for treatments. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Zainab Mohammed was a chief administrative officer with Nigeria's Judicial Service Commission when she discovered an abnormal growth in her left breast 1 year ago. She immediately went for a biopsy, which confirmed it was malignant. The outcome devastated her, she says.
I saw the result. The doctor said suspicious malignancy. I know when it say malignant, it means cancer. That was when I was like, my life has ended. I was like dead.
Zainab started treatments to fight the disease and eventually underwent a mastectomy. Then the medical bills came.
Managing cancer is very expensive. I had to look for funds from friends, family and friends. And at the end of the day, I had to sell a house to pay for my medications.
By WHO's estimates, some 41,000 cancer-related deaths took place in Nigeria last year, one of the highest mortality rates in the world. While unhealthy lifestyles and habits play a role, low awareness, lack of medical facilities, and the high cost of treatment in Nigeria are the major reasons the mortality rate is so high. Public health expert Aminu Aliyu acknowledges the situation is serious.
Within 2012, we had an increase in the number of incidents of cancer patients from 14 million to about 18 million in 2018. The statistics for 2019 is yet to come out.
To address the problem, Nigerian authorities launched a national cancer control plan last year. Early in the week, the government announced 50% discounts on chemotherapy treatments for patients. In October, non-profit groups like the Medicaid Foundation led thousands to the streets to create awareness and raise funds for treatment of cancer patients. Founder Zainab Bugudu says the non-profit has been serving patients for 8 years.
So far, we've raised over $1 million. We've impacted over 200,000 people. We've helped them. And we operate all over Nigeria. The impact is high in my state, in Kebbi, where my husband is the governor, because we reach all the 21 local government areas where we talk to people. We create awareness.
Cancer is the second leading cause of deaths globally, but the impact is often greater in low and middle income countries like Nigeria, which lack adequate resources to support cancer policies for their citizens, making fundraising and awareness even more critical. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
More small-scale farmers in central Kenya have switched from food crops to a herbal stimulant known locally as muguka, a variety of the drug khat. The farmers say they now make almost three times as much from growing the drug instead of food crops, but the county government wants them to create a balance between producing muguka and food. Raya Lambor has more from Embu, Kenya.
41-year-old Wilkiston Jerry grows Mogoka at a farm in Embu County in central Kenya. It is a crop that puts food on the table and will provide, she hopes, the money to send her 18-year-old son to college next year. She used to farm maize, but it was not profitable. She says she used 5,000 Kenya shillings to plow. She bought fertilizer worth 3,000 Kenya shillings and 2 bags of maize, one which cost 700 Kenya shillings. Everything, she says, cost her 10,000 Kenya shillings. But she did not harvest anything. She says the rains were little, and that happened for about 2 seasons. Wilkisa cleared her maize and planted Mogoka in 2 of her 3-acre farm. She now makes on average 20,000 Kenya shillings, or about $190 a week. Mogoka is a variety of cut that is green and bushy. It is a stimulant that produces a mild high when chewed. The crop is fast growing and does well in the semi-arid lowlands of Embu County, making it less vulnerable to erratic weather conditions. Farmers with a lot of land used to grow Mogoka, but now small-scale farmers are cashing in on the trade. John Mukundi is the chief executive officer of the Agriculture and Cooperative Docket in Embu County.
They are doing that because it is providing some employment, direct employment to the people that are in Mbeere region. And also, apart from employment, it is giving easy cash. People can get the money and they instantly when they sell their produce.
Embu's county government says there are now 65,000 farmers growing the crop in the region, making Mogoka one of the highest income earners for the region, apart from coffee and tea. But the county government is urging farmers to create a balance between growing the herbal stimulant and food crops.
So we are giving some free supplies of seed so that we can encourage those farmers to also plant some seed, some food crops that will enhance food security and nutrition. We are also encouraging them to take the advantage of the fertilizer subsidies that we are giving them.
Small-scale Mogoka farmers mainly sell the stimulant in local markets, but the crop is also transported to various parts of the country and is exported to Somalia. Farmers in the lowlands of Embu says despite efforts to boost food crops, the financial benefits of Mogoka outweigh growing food, at least for now. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Embu, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, conflict in Cameroon between the government and the English-speaking regions has caused death and displacement of 500,000 people. We'll explore how a peaceful resolution can be achieved on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.